Mike.
And Mike, what brings you to this this city and this particular place?
Because I want to sleep.
I see.
Anywhere.
Well, where did you sleep last night?
In a field, man.
And where was that?
Down the street.
In Santa Cruz.
In Santa Cruz, that's right.
And are you a long-term illegal sleeper?
Yep. I've been sleeping illegally for some time now.
And have you been clever in your illegal sleeping, or have the police simply been negligent?
I'd say I've been pretty lucky.
I see.
Yeah.
And what about your friends? Is illegal sleeping becoming all the rage?
Yeah.
Anybody getting tickets, or?
No, we haven't been caught. We're pretty smooth when it comes to squats.
I see. You've been squatting as well as sleeping outside.
Relax.
Mm-hmm. So, have you joined this vigil because you support the political purposes here, or because there's a group of people you like, or because you're just bored with sleeping in a field, or no squats available? What's the reason?
Because I support the right.
You support the right.
I support the right. I think that we should be able to sleep wherever we want. This is Earth. This ain't no government land. This is Earth. And
well, you
Earth
come, you know, at a crucial time, because I think four people have left the vigil recently who were the core of the vigil, not core, but were certainly very strong in the vigil, and we have only two or three people that are really at the center of the vigil here. Actually, I'm not. I'm just, you know, passerby, kind of, and I do a radio show. So I think it's great. You think you tend to stay for very long, or is you just sort
I'll
of checking out?
I'll stay a night to support, you know, throwing my claim.
Cool.
I'll stay a night. You know, tomorrow night, I think I'll hit the road again.
Have you done this kind of thing before in terms
no.
of vigiling? Or
no.
Is it the first
no.
time?
Yeah, it's first time for everything, I guess.
Yeah. And what do you make of this scene? Is it, have you talked to any of the people here? Get any feelings from them? Yeah.
It's a happy scene. People are starting to get a little restless, though, I think. And fed up with some of the things that are going on. But every road, there's a rock you got to trip on either. Right.
Well, any experiences in the last couple of weeks that you think might be of interest to your radio listeners about what it's like to be on the streets?
No.
Well, candid of you. Well, I want to thank you for shutting off the conversation. And if you have any thoughts, come on over and we'll pick it up again.
Okay, man. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. I'm speaking to Cabrillo Voice reporter Anna
Meehan.
And Anna, you're here as a class project or out of a genuine interest in the homeless situation?
Combined.
And are you intend to stay here late and watch these poor clowns get arrested?
They're going to get arrested?
Probably not. But the police occasionally do stalk around and look for people who are sleeping or covering up with blankets.
I'll stay here as long as I don't know how long, but
and will you get the word out to Cabrillo by passing out flyers and posting them?
I'll post them up.
Cool. Well, Dan, make sure you give her some flyers.
Okay.
What's happening? You know, Cabrillo has I guess it's in the county, so there isn't a sleeping ban, but do you know any homeless Cabrillo students who sleep out?
Well, I've known some that, like, a lot of, like, you know, transient that are, like, lots of times not having a place to live from, you know, month to month, moving around and living in the woods, you know, from time to time. Like, sometimes, or in their van, or, like, behind Cabrillo in the woods, or behind the UC.
And do you know, for a long time I've been interested in seeing if there were student organizations that were actually interested in these issues on campus at UC and at Cabrillo. Do you know of any such organization?
No, I don't.
But you intend to start one when you go back, don't you?
We'll see. I'll talk to people and stuff, but,
You're going to write down your number for Dan, so he'll be able to reach you by phone, right?
Okay, but I'm not putting my number on the air, nothing.
Okay. We can't get her number on the air, folks, but we will try to contact her off-air. And you may be writing something about this, or just taking some pictures?
Yeah, I'm not in the newspaper class, but I'll talk to people, and I'll tell them what's up, and like, see if they'll probably want... They're always looking for things to write about in the voice.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have Skid Marks Bob singing one of the subversive songs at City Hall.
Campfire, sing the whole night long. In the morning,
That, of course, was the infamous Skidmarks Bob singing about a week or two ago, and probably every other night, the song Sleep on the Mayor's Lawn, which I don't know if it was written by Phil Free, Bob, or some earlier incarnation, and frankly, I don't care. I myself have actually composed a little ditty about Lieutenant Habey, which isn't quite finished, and I was singing it last night at the Sleepout. And I thought perhaps it might be appropriate to kind of try it out on the air and get some new lyrics. We need some lyrics here. Let's get a few reactions from you out there in the audience. So you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. This is Bathrob Spears Broadsides, the Wednesday edition. And then you're on target with Bathrob Spear Robert Norse. That's me. And you can call in at 427-3772. So here's a little song in honor of Lieutenant Habey, who, as we have heard, has been accused of beating people across the street, and actually, I would say, convicted of stealing signs, food, and intimidating people improperly and illegally at the rally, at the, sleepout at City Hall, repeatedly, not just once, not just twice, but three or four or five times. Apparently a systematic pattern. Apparently he's also been convicted of lying to demonstrators. Well, let's hear me. Here I am. Maybe, Habey, you'll be fair. Maybe, Habey, I'll be there. Maybe, Habey, you'll be where someday. Oh, you are the one that steals the signs, and you are the one that draws the lines. Your decree is a law today. If we protest, you haul our stuff away. Oh, maybe, Habey, we'll stand strong. Maybe, Habey, you'll be gone. Maybe, Habey, it won't be long someday. So, call in with your criticisms and additional lyrics to 427-3772. We're looking for some good songs, and until we get them, I'm going to sing some more of these questionable songs. You may remember the famous song from the 1994 sit-in demonstrations against the anti-homeless, sit on the sidewalk, go to jail laws, composed by Lisa Henry and other folks. Who else composed that song? I don't remember. It was a takeoff on an old wobbly tune, Oh, Mr. Block. And it went like this. Oh, Mr. Mike, what has happened to you? Referring to Mike Rotkin. Oh, Mr. Mike, what has happened to you? You make us blue. Can it be true? Just take a look at the people you're trying to screw. Maybe soon you'll be on the streets too. Well, here's an update of that tune, and let's see what we can do with it. The Citizens Committee for the Homeless, they had a plan, $1 million trailer park on what was homeless land. CCH had to kill the campground to bring the money in and drive away 200 folks for 40 paying kin. So Coral Street did die, so Community House could fly. Oh, CCH, what has happened to you? You make us blue. Can it be true? Just take a look at the homeless you've already screwed. Maybe soon you'll be on the streets too. There was a camp called Coral Street, the only place to sleep, where poor and homeless gathered their dignity to keep. CCH said, move on, to the armory you will go. But men and women got together and told these bosses, no, we need our lives and jobs, we will not kill our dogs. Oh, CCH, what has happened to you? You make us blue. Can it be true? Just take a look at the homeless you've already screwed. Maybe soon you'll be on the streets, too. The Citizens Committee took moves to close the camp where homeless folk were tenting out against the cold and damp. The residents revolted and raised a cry around. You kick us out at Christmas time, we'll take our tents downtown. The merchants said, no way, the poor will ruin our day. Oh, Paul Marceau, you were given a trust, promised to us, promised no bus, but when the rains came, you turned and left us in the dust. Your words now worth nothing to us. And as time went on, the lyrics got a little funkier. For instance, the residents revolted, they formed the refugees. You forced them out of Santa Cruz, not even saying please. They roamed from park to campgrounds, you forced them to their knees. Throughout the town, the sleeping bandit put their lives in freeze. These tickets for the poor have started a class war. Oh, Mayor Mike, why are you such a dick? You make us sick. Boy, you're a prick. You call the cops or the landlords. You use the big stick. Your slick shtick, hey, it ain't worth a lick. Which may be carrying rhyming a little too far. Now, have I been ignoring the telephone? Have people been trying to call in and tell me to stop singing before it's too late? Well, let's continue. Not singing, but listening. And let's listen to this mystery tape. I cringe at what it might be, but I think it's probably of interest. If it isn't, we'll turn it off.
So it's 1:30 on March 8th, Friday, 1 week after you started this protest, Dan Hopkins, and you're furiously preparing for a radio show, too?
Yeah, I'm trying to get it ready.
And here comes your other number, Uncle Sean, who's just met with Fuhrer Mike Rodkin. How's it going, Sean?
So far, so good. Oh, wow, new one, Radio Shack, huh?
That's the same old one, actually. I got two of them. This one works sometimes.
Works sometimes.
Yeah, this machine. So anyway, you've been conferring with Uncle Mike?
Yeah, Uncle Mike.
And what did he say? Is he up for introducing? What did you ask him to do, anyway?
I asked him to possibly look into a couple locations which for warehouse space. We could possibly move the homeless people over there, which he wrote the address down. He's going to go check on it today. And I'm going to go get a couple other addresses, see if I can give it to him. Besides that, as far as leniency, until they find the site, he's going to call, talk to his police chief. They've already done that.
Did you ask him to introduce a moratorium on the camping ban as an emergency measure at Tuesday? And what did he say?
Yes, I did. And he said if he puts that on there, there's plenty of people which they have big money, and they don't want the ban lifted. And
he said he won't put it on there, in other words.
Basically, yes.
In other words, he believes in it, but he hasn't got the courage to do it, or he doesn't believe in it and he doesn't want to do it.
Actually, he's working something out with camping finance reform.
Come on over here. I don't want to hear the radio.
This is a public interest a research group, which he's trying to lift the whole sleeping and camping ban on a state level. But on a local level, he doesn't have much power because there's a lot of people with money here. If it goes on a state level and it gets dissolved, that supersedes any local.
That's what he says. But the reality is he has complete power to lift the camping ban. He is the fourth vote. If he says yes, the camping ban goes.
Possibly.
That's the truth. There are three people, Kennedy, Byers, and Scott, who oppose the sleeping ban. He's number four. He has absolute power to lift it. So, in fact, he's filling your head with shit again, Sean. What's going on here?
Well, if he's doing, he's doing. What can I say? Oh, well.
No, well. It is true, however, an emergency piece of legislation requires five votes. Still, he could introduce such a bill and put significant public pressure on this whole issue. Instead, of course, he said he won't.
Yeah, I could get in major trouble, I guess. I don't know. How can you put a mayor in trouble?
So nice you're so sympathetic to the mayor, Sean. No,
I'm not sympathetic at all.
You're reporting
his
views.
You know what, Robert?
Yeah.
I've been sleeping out here practically
tonight. No, you haven't.
I've been out here
sleeping. There's some guy looks like you. I think it's your brother.
Well, I haven't seen you come out here to spend the night yet.
I was out here one night. I was out here on Saturday night. You forgot it so soon. And I've been out here every other night with coffee.
Thanks.
And exciting tape recordings. Well, that was Dan Hopkins of about a week ago. Actually, that was Dan Hopkins of last Friday, and we were playing a tape there with talking about how we asked Mayor Rotkin to declare a moratorium on the sleeping ban and at least try to get that on the agenda for the Tuesday City Council meeting, and he declined to do that. Now we have the real live Dan Hopkins, who we've reached at the payphone. What's going on at the sleep out, Dan?
Well, right now it's kind of quiet, but we have had some excitement this morning.
What happened?
Well, actually, early in the morning, to start off with, a police officer walked through, and there was three people sleeping on the sidewalk, and actually all three of those people had gotten tickets the night before, and the police had told us that if they were there, they would get a second ticket the next day.
We should add that you were not one of those sleepers. You were hiding in the secret sleeping spot, right?
Yeah. I decided to get a one-night sleep since I've been here, and out of the, 13 days now. And but anyway, the interesting thing that happened was the officer just walked through, stopped, and looked at everybody.
Two officers, actually. I was there.
Oh, okay. That part, I wasn't there at that part.
Uh-huh.
This is another time, a little later.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And so then he just walked through, and then he walked right back out, and never gave nobody any tickets.
Right.
So something may have changed, but we're not sure. But then anyway, later on, Lieutenant Habee, who has given us quite a bit of problems
This is Horrid Habee we're talking about. Or Rabied Habee. We're trying to figure out an appropriate name. Special prizes we provided for appropriate names for Lieutenant Habee, which actually match his character and conduct.
Uh-oh. Anyway, so he came through and told us, you know, to get our food out of the way there, take it wherever it's supposed to go, and I didn't have any place to put it, you know.
He told you to take your personal food, which wasn't blocking or decaying or creating a public nuisance.
Right.
And he told you to remove it from the area.
Right.
Did you suggest he remove himself from the area, perhaps?
And no, he didn't, but then the next thing he said was, if we have to bring a dumpster over here, we'll just throw it in the dumpster, you know.
You should have said, if we have to bring a police review board over here, we will.
Yeah, right. Hey, that's not a bad idea. Mm. And so, anyway, I recorded all this and documented everything. And then it turns out that he walked away, and someone else got in a conversation with him, and then he turned around and told them that that I was lying about everything.
Like what?
About the him bringing the dumpster and all that, when he threatened to bring the dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
They said, he said he told two or three people right in front of the city manager's office there. He told them that I was lying, and I was a troublemaker, and this and that.
Oh, you know. Now you become a troublemaker, Dan. Well, I was wondering when you would graduate to that status there.
Yeah, now I'm getting, I'm not nearly close to you, but
well,
I'm getting up there a little bit.
I think you may be surpassing me. I mean, after all, you're there at the sleep out every night. You're going to become Habee's number one target. I mean, are his number one target.
No, I'll never surpass you. But anyway, as it turns out, we got it on tape that Sherry said that...
Sherry Connable, the community
uh-huh.
activist?
Right.
She slept there last night, right?
Yeah, and she was a witness.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Okay. I'm talking to Sean. I'm sorry. I had someone talking to me.
No problem.
Okay. Anyway, so where were we? The part about... Sherry Connable told us on tape that Habee told her that I lied about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And what he didn't know is that Sherry was right there behind a wall there,
mm-hmm.
and she was listening to everything that happened, and she heard everything that happened.
Mm-hmm.
So she just told him straight out. She says, I was standing right there, and Dan didn't lie.
And what did Habee say when confronted with us?
Well, he didn't say anything, and then she said, you know what? She says, I've known Dan for months, you know, and I know him personally. And she says, however you view him here and his actions, one thing that Dan won't do, and that's lie.
Mm-hmm.
She said, he told her, well, since you've known him for so many months, I'll think about it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, this idea of trying to persuade Habee to be reasonable, I think, is another one of these acts, like trying to persuade Scott Kennedy to be a nice guy.
Oh, right.
I don't think that's really in the cards. I think that,
mm-hmm.
you know, God has to do that.
There you go.
Of course, as an atheist, I don't see much chance in that. But, hey, I mean, I could be wrong, right?
Yeah.
So anyway...
Did you? I guess you said yesterday you began filing complaints against Lieutenant Haley with the infamous Citizens Civilian Police Review Board or Citizens Police Review Board.
Right, I did, and I started it yesterday. I got it all documented. Now I have it filed, but I had to do two of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, two of them is only a small part of what I have. So what they told me was that they noticed a pattern in the tapes that I have, you know, recordings of everything that happened,
mm-hmm.
and what I wrote. They said there's a pattern in there, and it's an ongoing pattern. And they said that I don't even have to file another complaint with my other issues, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They said I just have to keep bringing the papers in and just add it to the same complaint because it says there's a definite pattern throughout of the behavior that he has.
Well, I wouldn't wait up nights for Habee to be disciplined, reprimanded, or even scolded.
Uh-huh, right. No, I'm going to be sure and I can continue.
But it's good that you're doing it, and I also think you should get copies of these complaints for yourself.
Yes, I do have them. Uh-huh.
That's good.
Right.
So how many people are there with you now?
Well, right at the moment, there's basically there was four here just a while ago. But at this time of the day, you know, usually people go and take care of little businesses they have, you know, and stuff like that, you know, whatever they have to do for the day. And so it's real calm at this time of the day, you know. And but then as the afternoon goes on every day, more and more people come, you know, and so it comes up, you know, usually at least 25, 30 people coming through here, you know, in the afternoons. And
you've been giving away flyers and getting, shall we say, names and phone numbers on petitions?
Yeah, we got about, I think a little over 300 signatures right now, and we haven't even really, you know, put a real strong effort for it because we're all tired, you know, and we're having to sit down and rest, you know, and stuff like that most of the time.
Just lazy and shiftless.
Yeah, we're in. Yeah, you know what? That's funny. You know, thinking about homeless people as being lazy. You know, like right now, the people that are here and the people, even the activists that aren't staying here all night, are putting in way more hours a day and way more effort than most people on a job. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where they get this thing about people are lazy. You know, and especially us here at the demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really in good hopes that we have a successful protest on Saturday. It's at what is that? The 16th, right? Yeah, this Saturday. What's day after tomorrow, I guess. And
actually, it's 2 days. It's 3 days. It's tomorrow's Thursday, then Friday, and then
yeah,
Saturday.
Yeah, yeah, a couple days. You know, 3 days from now, whatever.
3 days from now.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to everybody showing up. You know,
any instruments and kazoos and
yeah,
costumes and.
Yeah, yeah.
And friends and neighbors and girlfriends and boyfriends and
yeah, everything.
Sons and daughters and parents and grandparents.
Oh,
and
yeah, yeah.
Hobos and beggars and tramps, cross-eyed mosquitoes and bow-legged ants. And
right. Everybody's welcome there. Even entire groups of people, you know, clubs or whatever.
You bring city council members, but make sure that they have, you know, we'll give them 3-minute time limits on their speeches.
Yeah, right. And so, yeah, we're even inviting the city council to come down, you know.
Right.
If they want to change their ways and come down and join us, we'll be more.
Oh, they don't mind joining us if it's a big enough demonstration, because then they can hog the media as they used to do on the sidewalk. But
anyway, so.
Do I sound bitter?
I'm hoping that all your listeners will come down to the protest. And can you tell them the location? I wasn't quite sure.
Sure, the location is Cathcart and Pacific, which is of course Hippie Corner, the Cage. It's across from Cat and Canary and the food court. It's where. Where you find many countercultural people gathering at the fenced-off former Ford's parking lot area, which isn't entirely fenced off, but the downtown commission wanted to fence it off. That was blocked, to their credit, by four city council members, Yokoyama, Kennedy, Byers, and Scott. No thanks to Rotkin and Matthews and Mary Beth Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's at 1 o'clock on Saturday, and it's a big rally and protest. We're going to have an eat out, a speak out, I guess we have a lie out. And we're not talking about what Lieutenant Habee does. That's a different kind of lying. We're going to kind of, I guess, we may lie down on the sidewalk to see whether it's a comfortable enough sidewalk for appropriate, you know, since there's no legal place to sleep, we're looking for new legal vistas where we can, you know, where body can meet cement in a pleasant and enjoyable way, where the downtown merchants can, shall we say, educate themselves about homeless problems, where tourists can not only pick up trinkets and throw money into the merchant stores, but also chit-chat with homeless people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, anyway, and then also between now and Saturday, if...
And then they'll be asleep out that night. Of course, it'll be night 16 of your sleep out.
Right. And if people want to come by City Hall at 809 Center, which is right across from the library here, you know, and if you want to come down and just say hi to us, introduce yourself to us, we'd be more than glad to talk to you about what's happening here at the demonstration and the sleeping ban. And we need that kind of support, too, because, like, when we feel real low when these cops are harassing us and everything, and even one supporter comes in and just says hi, you know, and wants to know about what's going on, it boosts our spirits up quite a bit, you know, and gives us a lot of strength and courage to keep going, you know. And so, anyway.
By the way, there was a fellow who videoed your presentation to City Council last night. You spoke at Oral Communications before City Council.
Uh-huh.
And he thought you were one of the most eloquent speakers, so I told him that he obviously had not heard my speech.
Yeah. You know what, Robert? That's the truth, too, man. Everybody that I talked to today said that they thought that you had the very best speech of all.
No. Yeah, that's not what... The general consensus was that you had the humble, sweet, goody-two-shoes, fine speech, which, I mean, here I was coming off with my usual growling and threatening to come downtown with two demonstrators. And, you know, that here you were just sort of telling truth to power and, frankly, doing it. I mean, this whole sleep out is from you and Sean, and many people supporting us, certainly, good supporters, you know, but you were the two that are just, you know, putting everything into it. Without much support from, you know, those other people who've been doing, you know, lots of things.
Oh, no.
You know, but, I mean, who haven't read... Well, I mean, they're showing up.
I'm glad to see
people like Robert Norse and Sherry Connable and some of the River Street refugees every now and then, mm-hmm. you know, peeking in and kind of, you know, plopping in with a tape recorder or whatever. And I guess it's growing because, as I said, Sherry and I stayed there last night, though not together, I'd like to add.
Well, you know... Everybody that comes, irregardless of the amount of time that they spend, you know, mm-hmm. is very important to us. Because once they leave and everything, we feel a lot better. So even like some of the people, you know, they bring us little things like this little girl. I don't know where she came from, but she was about like 9 or 10 years old or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she came up there. And she brought us 3 little bag lunches.
All right.
One was a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and an orange, and another was an apple and some kind of meat sandwich, and then the third one, I don't know what it was.
Straight from probably one of these Elm Street Mission type of places.
And so she handed it to us, and then she just smiled, and she said goodbye, or she left, you know. And then some other people, you know, coffee's really important to us, especially in the early morning or as it becomes dark. It gets real cold because some wind comes through here, and it's a heavy chill factor in here. And so we get cold clear to the bone, and we have no way of heating water up here, and it's illegal on top of that. So when people bring us those big cups of coffee, oh, man, it's like heaven. You know, we share them with each other and stuff. If there's not enough to go around, we still share it, you know.
Is this some sort of craven panhandling for coffee on the ear? You think you can get out around the city's panhandling ban that way?
Oh,
well,
no.
You've got to think common, big boy.
Uh-oh, they got a case against me now.
Actually, the city does not make it illegal to ask for a spare change. It only makes it illegal to ask for spare change after dark, in a group of two, from a sitting position, within 10 feet of a stand. Well, I could go into about 40 other places under which you could be, shall we say, cited for asking for a spare change or anything of value. Like, you know, conscience from a city council member. I mean, that would certainly be a valuable thing to find.
Well, Robert, I'm going to have to go because I got to get out to the front here and...
Get out there and take that damn demo downtown, you clown.
Okay.
That's the consummate advice I have for these folks.
All right, we'll see you later.
All right.
All right, bye-bye. Thank you.
And, of course, that was Dragon's Heart Daniel Hopkins doing a demonstration downtown. He never listens to my advice, however. He insists on holing up near the mayor's office, for God's sake. This thing he has for the mayor, I do not understand. I mean, mayor has not invited him out to dinner, never writes, no phone calls. I mean, there's a phone nearby. You think the mayor would come out and, you know, maybe share a sandwich with him, but no. You know, I mean, the mayor's there all day. I saw the mayor sneak away last night rather than talk to Dan. I mean... You know, I think that's rather rude, frankly. I mean, after all, but I, of course, belabor the point. What have I got here for you but more tapes? You know, what goes on at the sleep out continues, and I'm going to give you a little more of that, and hopefully I'm going to also kind of do a couple of flashbacks to an earlier era when there were other demonstrations happening to give you kind of a sense of contrast. Before I do, let's tune in on me and Skidmark Bob Duran last night, about 1 o'clock or thereabouts, maybe 1:30 in the morning.
I'm with Bob Duran.
Yes, we are.
At 1:35 here at the City Council Sleepout, night 12.
Yes, it is, night 12.
And the 12th law. Night, so to speak.
Well, probably Robert Florey will be taken into custody tonight because he's violating within 48 hours.
And what about Dan Hopkins? Is he asleep?
Dan is not here. Dan is off getting sleep elsewhere.
In a secret sleeping spot.
Secret sleeping spot. In case, you know, he's our safe man. Keep him in a safe place. And tomorrow you can continue it if everybody gets taken away.
So are you're not expecting yourself to be arrested for sleeping?
Not for sleeping.
I see. Possibly coffee drinking without a permit.
Oh, there's one.
Oh,
of
cool. Here comes a local police officer. Now they're turning the other way.
Oh, yeah. We happen to be by the police station. Oh, I noticed two police officers over here on top of the parking garage across from the scent anal.
Really?
Yeah, they're up there just conversing, so I went up and...
So you were going to do an expose of Officer Over tonight?
Actually, no. Phil Free did. He did an expose.
And how was that?
It was very good. It went very well. As a matter of fact, he got a couple calls with people who had complaints about Over. One woman read her testimony over the air, read her police report over the air.
Perfect.
Because they were walking down the street kicking a can, and they're coming back from a bar. They weren't driving, and because they were kicking a can in the beach flats, I guess that was warrant for them to get pulled over by Officer Over.
Can kicking without a permit.
Ended up with a big spiel happening, and she ended up spitting in his face, and, well, it got ugly, and so she got charged with, I think, resisting arrest and a few other things. But she read her police report over the air, and it's very interesting.
You know, this is actually what I hope would happen back in 1990 when we would have a... People's Tribunal, and this is sort of a People's Tribunal
of
the area.
At least the radio station is.
Great.
I know.
We have this useless police review board that's getting...
Oh, there's a City Council Kitty.
The City Council Kitty is even joining the sleepout.
Yeah, we can get an interview with
we can get the City Council Kitty to respond to... The City Council Kitty is a large, would you say kind of tawny cat?
It kind of looks like Scott Kennedy.
Kitty?
Kitty. Meow.
Looks a little like Scott Kennedy, yeah.
Yeah, Scott Kennedy.
Got more grace, though, than I think. Well, I don't wish to criticize
so,
poor Scott.
It's been a quiet night, except for this truck over here. This
sitting around. What's it doing?
Burning carcinogens into the air.
This is a long truck parked between the Civic and City
probably
Hall.
Probably full of cops are probably going to send them all over here.
No, right. They're waiting inside, right?
Yep.
Or they're all stashed
like
in the Civic like they were in 1994 during the Coalition to Decriminalize Poverty demonstration.
Oh, I remember those very well.
Yeah.
Well, tonight they ought to come in. They'll probably take Florey away, like I said.
But, it looks like Sean will get taken away,
too. He fought last night, this morning. Well, we both got a ticket at 2 in the morning. I went to the radio and put it on there, and then he stayed. At 7:30 in the morning, Officer Medina, the young Medina, brother's on the force. It looks like he's about 16 years old, snot-nosed kid. Anyway, he said to Robert Florey, you're under arrest. Says he violated it within 48 hours. And so Robert Florey showed him the exception in the law that basically says that it's got to be within a day.
Can't be on the same day.
Yeah, can't be on the same day.
It's a continuing offense, yeah.
Just like an Officer Medina made the point of saying, well, because just like with that car, because it's not paying and it gets a ticket, you know, and they're not going to come 10 minutes later and ticket it again. It's going to be there all day until tomorrow and then get another ticket. So I guess it's the same. We're kind of like cars, but he didn't realize that we're a little more valuable than cars. So
sometimes
now
these things
violating.
Come slowly to police officers.
Now it's a new day.
A new day is dawn.
Flores.
Or a new night, perhaps.
Entered the misdemeanor zone.
As has Sean.
I don't know if there's any felony camping laws, but... There should be.
Well,
three strikes, felony camping.
Three snores and you're out.
60 years in the pen, sleeping. What are you in here for?
Here comes Jeannie, marauding in the night. Biking by.
Oh, God, don't crash, please. I always wondered if that woman was going to crash.
No, she's not going to crash. Hey. And arriving at this point, which was about 12 hours ago in the wee hours of this morning, Jeannie, you may have seen her. She's a woman who's homeless, who... often seen on her bike. She has sort of a back deformity, so she's often kind of bent over and sometimes is in serious pain, but she's been around for quite a while, and
she chose to come and sleep with us at this city hall last night. We've had a few homeless people who were just simply looking for a place to sleep rather than doing any kind of protest join us, and that kind of participation may be the key to the victory eventually somewhere down the road that this sleep out has. There's been a lot of criticisms the sleep out is not particularly well organized, that it isn't well prepared for, that it doesn't have enough publicity or things of that sort, and all these things are certainly true, you know, but you do what you can when you can, and when the opportunity arises, you have to support what's there to be done. And that's why I encourage people to come support the sleep out, and that's why I respect activists who do it. And you don't have to, you know, get arrested, and that may not be on your personal agenda now, but if you can simply assist in some concrete, regular way, you can help make the sleep out a success, whether it be by coming down and bringing coffee or food or checking in and talking, as Dan Hopkins has said, or calling in to their payphone at 425-9679, writing a letter to the Sentinel and telling them you think that the mayor should do what it was done in San Francisco, make sleeping legal. Real simple, that Santa Cruz can't be worse than San Francisco. That's unthinkable. That's wrong. You can do all kinds of things. You write a letter to City on a Hill if you're a student. You can volunteer to post some flyers. You can do any number of things. We don't have... You can hear these kind of pitches on, non-profit radio stations where they do these marathons. We're not pitching you for money. I mean, the point here is not money at all. The point is some minor, small form of commitment, or major commitment, you know, come and sleep in your car nearby, get a ticket with us, or come and stand there with us during the night, and I say us because I'm occasionally there. I was there last night, I slept there last night, but I'm not usually there, but Dan is, he's always there, you know, except for those rare occasions when he's off trying to get some sleep in a hidden corner because it's illegal for him to sleep at night outside. Sean is always there. Chad is usually there. Jimmy is there till all hours of the night. I guess Tom came and went. He was there, stayed many nights, then he had to leave, just as others have had to come and stayed and risked arrest and then left. It's not a time for activists to fight with each other. It's a time for activists to get together and, or let's all fight with each other, sure, but let's at the same time support this sleep out. That's what we have to do at the same time as we may disagree with each other. Of course, you can always call City Hall, 429-3550. Tell them to stop the sleeping ban. You know, it doesn't mean we want homeless people parked on your rooftops and in front of your doors and in front of your houses or anything like that, but there's got to be legal places for people to sleep. Or if they find legal places to sleep in the absence of legal places, then you just don't arrest them unless there's some real crime taking place. And here we have a real criminal entering the station, that bane of the bureaucrats, battling Bob LaMonica, with what looks like some kind of a flyer, oh yes, about CHP and its nasty operations up in, I guess it's Humboldt County, is it? Civil Liberties Monitoring, CHP, pretext stops by the California Highway Patrol, my, does this sound familiar or what? He apparently want me to read this, perhaps? Bob has handed this to me. This is an article by Mark Drake called Probable Cause from the Civil Liberties Monitoring Project about... Actually, it's what was happening up in Mendocino and Humboldt counties probably about 4 or 5 months ago. It's probably a bit out of date. It talks about how the CHP was stopping people essentially as a pretext to search their vehicles for marijuana. And do you want to say anything about that, Bob?
I just got this, in fact, a few minutes ago. And what the key buzz phrases here are pretext. What happens when you're stopped by police officers is there can be an assumption that you're leaving yourself open for a search without a warrant. And just to read some key passages here, as long as you keep answering questions which have nothing to do with the ostensible purpose of the stop, you are effectively consenting to the line of interrogation, okay? And it goes on from there. This method of policing, which ends up in overbooking, and it gives the appearance that police officers, law enforcement, the DA's office, this whole process is accomplishing something, is in many ways fundamentally flawed. And it's flawed by the way the very process is flawed. So you stop someone and you entrap them into a search, and then you overbook them into possession for sale, and that goes down on your credit as a mark towards your career enhancement. This game is all about...
As a police officer.
You bet. As a police officer, as a DA, across the board, abuse of power. This is a game that's being played. It's based on grant acquisition, career preservation, and code of silence.
Thank you, Bob. I think that's important to know. I actually heard some rather interesting information on, of all places, KSCO 2 days ago, and of all people, shows Steve Hartman's show. And I don't know if many of our listeners know who Steve Hartman is. He's he was the mega right-wing candidate in the 1988 elections here in Santa Cruz on the city council. And yet at the same time, he was a supporter, an underground supporter of those of us who are serving homeless people free food, perhaps to help embarrass the city council at that time, which was a bunch of, well, like they are now, liberal hypocrites or so-called pseudo-progressive do-nothings. KSCO on Hartman's show discussed the terrorism bill, which we were warned about by Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs last year, but it kind of disappeared from sight. Well, now with the high-profile bombings of Hamas in Israel and the Oklahoma bombing, the terrorism bill is back and worse than ever. But the sad thing is that I don't know what the updated version is all about. I called Hartman and asked him to post it on my email, and I haven't yet been able to get access to it. I was busy running around getting tapes like the ones that I've been playing all day here about the campground. But if anybody knows anything about this terrorism bill, I would encourage you to call in to 427-3772. I hear the bill is a major terror, no question about it. And it's actually, I think it's hitting Congress today or tomorrow, so it's... The time is short to oppose this bill, so if anybody knows anything about it, including Mr. LaMonica, who's...
Well, I just want to say encroaching fascism. The signs are around us. This is the 90s. Sleeping ban. Let's be real. Let's get with it. Seriously. Pretext stops. This article, which is by Mark Drake, dated, you know, called Probable Cause, pretext stops. We have to be willing to look at how the process has been perverted, how the government has been perverted, and we see these things that are happening around us, terrorism bills, and it's easy to figure out what that's all about. It's all about infiltrating, okay? It's all about infiltrating. And what's the other one? To me, the one that really gets me that people do not speak about, it's the Bill Clinton's trial balloon for national school uniforms.
Remember, you mentioned that before, and actually I think part of the terrorism bill is an expansion of the time you can be held without charges by police nationally under, I guess it's under terrorism charges. Again, I want to know what that bill is. I'm hoping on Friday, by which time it may be too late to engage in any meaningful email debate or letters or phone calls to Congress, not that that has much impact anyway. I'm not quite sure what impact that has, but I will try to get more information when I get back to you on Friday on this terrorism bill.
One last thing, and that is the stall tactic that's used by the co-opted politicians. And the stall tactic is that they refuse to deal with things head on. They find these halfway solutions. And in many ways, the voucher issue at state parks is not dealing with the real crucial point, as far as I'm concerned, of the issue regarding shelter. It has to do with legal open-air shelters and the precedent therein. The reason why marijuana has yet to be dealt with 70-odd years later after suppression is that the precedent-setting reality that would occur. And you can see this in issue after issue across the board. We're dodging and we're setting up this state, this police state, and it's going to become increasingly more difficult to speak out. The time to find solidarity is now.
Yeah, if you want to speak out, you, of course, can speak out on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and the lines are open, 427-3772. There's been a lot in the paper about this story, and you probably read it, about this crazy court decision where the forfeiture laws were used... Sure, Bob. Forfeiture laws were used to seize a woman's car because her husband picked up a prostitute and, I don't know, got a blowjob in the car. Here's the story from Deborah J. Saunders from the March 11th Chronicle. She terms the story "The Death of Fundamental Fairness." 8 years ago, Tina Bennis was so upset when her husband John didn't return from work, she called missing persons. It turned out that her husband had been arrested after Detroit police witnessed a prostitute perform a sex act on him in the couple's 1977 Pontiac, a car co-owned with his wife. John was charged with gross indecency. Months later, he pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor indecency charge, for which he was fined $250 and sentenced to community service, according to Stephen B. Herpel, Tina Bennis's attorney. And why does Tina have an attorney? As if the mother of four hadn't been through enough, the courts punished her, too. Under a then-new statute, a Michigan court seized and sold the family Pontiac. Last week, in a chilling 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court of the United States affirmed this unjustified seizure, even though the car was co-owned by an innocent person, arguably a victim of the crime. Herpel concluded, guilt or innocence is now irrelevant constitutionally. Some background. The seizure of possessions is nothing new. Boats used to smuggle contraband have been seized. Courts view the vessels themselves to be guilty offenders. Following that philosophy, Chief Justice William Rehnquist cited a 1974 decision in which the court concluded the innocence of the owner of property subject to forfeiture has almost uniformly been rejected as a defense. It was kind of Rehnquist to rely on a 1974 decision because most of the precedents he cited were downright ancient. The 1827 seizure of the privateer Palmyra, commissioned by the King of Spain, an 1844 admiralty proceeding, Harmony versus U.S., an 1878 case involving a distillery, then Prohibition-era rulings. The country's big bench is making decisions about cars and crime based on 19th-century admiralty law. Justice Clarence Thomas remarked on this when he wrote in a concurring opinion, "One aware of the history of forfeiture law and 200 years of this court's precedent regarding such laws might well assume that such a scheme is lawless, a violation of due process. One would think it, Justice Thomas, and be right." Why the court's thinking was so convoluted that Justice Ruth Ginsburg figured that since the car was worth only $600 and the administrative costs of the sale had to be deducted, there was so little money left after it was sold that it wasn't worth giving Tina Bennis half. The court justified taking the Pontiac because the Bennises owned another car. Herpel noted that such thinking shows how out of touch the court is. The $600 Pontiac was the first second car the Bennises owned. After it was taken, he said, Tina Bennis had to bundle up her four children to walk the two eldest a mile to school each morning. Justice John Paul Stevens saw through the precedent gauze. He voted against the majority, writing, quote, "Fundamental fairness prohibits the punishment of innocent people." And I think Mike Rotkin might pay a little attention to Justice Stevens' statement. Fundamental fairness prohibits the punishment of innocent people. That has, I think, a little bit of bearing on the sleeping ban debate. Herpel believes this ruling discredits the conservative judicial philosophy. This is not a ruling a conservative should have made. Good conservatives should oppose the rapacious punishment of innocent people. This is why the Right Thinking, that's right-wing thinking, Institute for Justice filed a brief in favor of Tina Bennis. Conservatives must oppose government when its actions are so intrusive and unfair. Where Tina Bennis found the guts to endure embarrassment for the sake of the quaint notion of fairness, I don't know. But Tina Bennis is a patriot who knows more about justice than Justices Rehnquist, Thomas, and Ginsburg. That's from Deborah J. Saunders, The Death of Fundamental Fairness, about the Tina Bennis case, reported in the San Francisco Chronicle of March 11th. So you see, I do have clippings here, and I am interested. And I have I actually had an interview I did today earlier, which I haven't played because, frankly, it was rather boring and there was no new information that came out of it. But the interview is with Judy Appel, who is a legal counsel for the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco. That's a group of homeless advocates who publish the Street Sheet, not the Street Shit Sheet, which is my newsletter here in Santa Cruz, but the Street Sheet, which is a larger, more professionally printed newspaper, actually, monthly newspaper, which homeless people sell on the corners for a dollar. Anyway, Ms. Appel had some rather discouraging news. She actually had not much new news at all, and she was using so much bureaucratese when she spoke to me that I didn't want to even bother to play it. But I called the Coalition on Homelessness to find out what was happening with Willie Brown's It's Okay to Sleep in San Francisco policy, and I got bad news. While it is true that Mayor Brown, who replaces the vicious Frank Jordan with his Matrix program, while it is true that Mayor Brown has said it is the policy of my government, in essence, not to arrest people for sleeping, the police department is refusing to abide by this decision. Brown is not forcing them to. No policies have actually been instituted on the day-to-day level to put this into effect, and homeless people report an actual increase in Matrix-style arrests and stops and citations. This is sad and bad, and my immediate reaction was, well, Brown's a liar, join Rotkin. And I couldn't really get too much clarity on this issue from her, because she's apparently still playing the lawyer on it, you know, being very circumspect and hopeful. But I also found this article in the March 11th Chronicle in the business section under the column Legal Grounds by Reynolds Holding. And it's a little subsection called Cold Comfort, and it reads like this. Mayor Willie Brown may be proclaiming publicly that Matrix is dead and buried, but the city is keeping its legal options open. The Mayor Jordan-era program of sweeping the homeless out of parks and off sidewalks was challenged in court 3 years ago by the American Civil Liberties Union and other lawyers. Last August, U.S. District Judge D. Lowell Jensen threw the case out, rejecting arguments that rousting homeless people without giving them shelter was cruel and unusual punishment. But the plaintiffs appealed, and last Tuesday, city lawyers filed a brief defending laws that bar sleeping in parks, lodging on public or private property, and obstructing sidewalks. The city says the program doesn't exist anymore, and then it goes on to defend the constitutionality of the program, said attorney Marcia Rosen, who is challenging the laws on appeal. It sounds kind of Alice in Wonderland to me. Not so, says Deputy City Attorney Linda Ross. As long as they are pursuing the case, we have to defend it because the city wants to retain the ability to enforce these laws, she said. It would be a mistake to let one group dictate policy. Ross also suspects her opponents of wanting to win so they can recover their legal fees. If the policy doesn't exist anymore, she said, why are they pursuing the case? In the meantime, a bit of advice. No matter what Willie says, don't get caught napping in the park. That's March 11th, business section of the Chronicle, under the Legal Grounds by Reynolds Holding column. Actually, the lead story is Fairness in Housing Fuels Suit, which is another subject I'm not going to go into at the moment. So, I have been circulating flyers which ask Rotkin to at least catch up with Brown and declare sleeping legal. I will continue to circulate those flyers because Brown has publicly gone on record by saying sleeping is legal in San Francisco. People will not be arrested for sleeping. They'll be arrested for encamping, in groups with tents, yes. They'll be arrested for public drinking, yes. Both those decisions are wrong, in my opinion. But they will not be arrested for sleeping. That's what Brown said. Now, his police are doing it anyway. So says the Coalition on Homelessness, so says the San Francisco Chronicle. That's probably what's happening up there. And Brown isn't blind. He knows it's going on. He hasn't spoken out against it or stopped it. In 4 days, he can close down the Housing Commission and turn it over to federal control. That's what he did. He apparently cannot stop the Matrix program, or I think he has chosen not to stop it. So we might call him a bigger hypocrite than Rotkin if he's saying one thing and doing another. Rotkin, at least, is saying what he's doing. Sleep in Santa Cruz, go to jail. And that's not a quote, but that's the substance of what he and the sleeping band say. I don't get much comfort out of that, frankly, but I do want to say it because it's true. There's also a column by Sherry Connable in the Santa Cruz County Sentinel of March 10th. Apparently it took her a month to get this thing in. It takes a long time. I tried to get a column in here, and I have not been successful so far. You probably read Sherry's column. It is a picture of her here. She's smiling, looks nice. We should read this column since we have time, since I'm going on forever and nobody's coming into the studio, since the homeless sleep out at City Hall apparently is still has survived the latest assault by Habe, Lieutenant Joe Habe. Here's what Sherry Connable wrote in the March 10th Sentinel. On March 16th, a dramatic shift will occur for about 120 folks in our community. If they choose to go to sleep that night in the city, they will be committing a crime. They are homeless, and by sleeping outside, they will violate the Santa Cruz camping ordinance. On the evening before that, March 15th, they will be assisted in performing the very same act. They will be sleeping at the Armory through an emergency shelter program run by the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program. That program closes after March 15th. Last November, the Santa Cruz City Council declared a shelter crisis in our city. This opens the door to provide emergency shelter under relaxed regulations. In December, the mayor's office announced the closing of the only homeless campground or open-air shelter at the corner of River and Coral Streets for health-related reasons. And I think I interrupt this article to say that we rather closely examined those reasons and found that they were a pretext, so that, in fact, the CCH could eliminate the campers from the area for Christmas and stage the way for their community house panhandling efforts, the Trailers Not Trolls project. But continuing with what Sherry is writing, for health-related reasons. It had been operating for 3 years from March to November and was serving 250-plus people when it closed, actually for 2 years legally under permits, or for actually 4 or 5 years or longer without permits. Again, my interpolation. It was understood that it would not reopen this March because plans were underway to build a transitional housing project there for 40 homeless folks. How, as a community, do we resolve these contradictions? And by the way, it's not necessarily for homeless folks. It's for homeless or low-income folks. So they're turning a campground for 300 into a very low-income project for 40. I've repeated this dozens of times, but it still seems amazing. How, as a community, do we resolve these contradictions? That from November to March, we assist shelterless people meeting their biological need to go to sleep at night, but for the rest of the year, they are criminals if they do the same thing, that we declare a shelter crisis and then cut back severely on shelter operations. For if we do not have something in place by March 15th, that is what we will have done. Our contradictory treatment of the homeless is a deep wound that has been long oozing among us. These folks are not just a nameless, faceless statistic. They are very real folks with very difficult stories and circumstances. A large percentage are mentally ill. John Stewart, take note. Where do they go? To the woods, the riverbanks, the parks, the beaches, the downtown? In a climate like ours, camping is a reasonable alternative. After all, some very intelligent, resourceful people lived here for hundreds of years using a technology very much like tents. Everyone agrees on what is needed to make a good campground, a solid management proposal, a site, and funding. Each of these is potentially in place. We all need to see that a small pilot project can work. For this reason, Save Our Shelter has developed a draft proposal for a campground that would serve 80 people. It includes a paid coordinator and social worker, 8 monitors who would receive extensive training, a small fee for service, $2 a night. That sounds worse and worse to me, but a 6-month limit of stay, a weekly work requirement, clearly defined campsites with 10 campers per site, good sanitation facilities, communal cooking areas, an oversight committee that includes camper representation, and an individual intake procedure with a clear signed contract outlining rules and regulations. The site could also serve as a day labor pool pickup. I know I don't like the sound of a lot of that, but let me go on. The site. Most of us working on this issue think that public land is the most likely candidate. The city and county certainly have land that could be designated. 4 city council members, Catherine Byers, Celia Scott, Mike Rotkin, and Scott Kennedy, have suggested looking at the Pogonip as a possibility. And I might add, rejected it as after they looked at it. One particular site there at the top of Golf Club Drive meets all the criteria for a workable location and is very distinct from the rest of the park. Private land would also work, and we are currently in discussions with a private landowner with a very good site. I think that one also fell through, although again she's not saying which it is. For funding, a campground could be done for a very low-cost budget, especially with a share of cost from campers. Redevelopment monies could be used as well as unspent CDBG funds. Mayor Rotkin and Councilman Kennedy said recently that funding could be found if there was an approved program. That was great news. The county should also pick up a share of the cost. It seems that in all the pieces, that all the pieces are potentially in place, proposal, site, and funding. March 15th is just around the corner. And working with homeless folks, the things that I see that most often keep people trapped are isolation and instability. Campground offers a small measure of relief from both. A place to have a bit of community and security, to have the opportunity to belong and to participate out of this ground, change can begin to take place. So let's move ahead. If we have a shelter crisis, let's provide shelter in the best and most diverse ways we can. The homeless need it, and we all need it. We need to heal the long, festering wound of the many contradictions of how we treat the homeless in a community that is so proud of its humanitarian reputation. Sherry Connable. Sherry Connable is a local activist involved with homeless issues. This is Have a Heart, Santa Cruz, and Build a Campground from the Sunday Sentinel, March 10th. Well, listeners, if you're listening out there, what do you think of this article by Sherry Connable? Is it a good idea, bad idea? Sherry's been working on this one for 6 years at least, since 1990, when she was forming the Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep, which excluded me and other activists, but still had an idea that wasn't a bad idea. And the campground is not a bad idea. I'm a bit concerned about all the social management and the monitors and the fees, the work requirement, paid coordinator and social worker. But what do you have to say? Let's get some input here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, that means the lines are open, 427-3772, 427-3772, and this is Bathrobes Pierre, who is running out of steam, guys. It's been a long night, and I'm about to crash in a heap. So if you want to keep this show going, rather than hear tapes, now's the time to call. I suppose everybody saw the little March 7th article, What Do You Think About the Camping Ban?, the on-the-street question man on page 2 of the Sentinel. Now, this question has appeared in the past about 3 or 4 times, and almost invariably at least 3 of the 4 answers are the camping ban sucks big time and should be eliminated. This time, all 4 people agree the camping ban should go. What do you think?
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, I was just wondering, would camping still be illegal, though, even if they did have the camping ground?
Well, you see, that's a good question. Actually, it's illegal now, and it will continue to be illegal until we get some real protest.
My second question was, what happened at City Hall last night? I haven't heard yet.
Oh, yeah, sure. This campground proposal that I read to you, which was in the Sentinel, doesn't really suggest lifting the sleeping ban. And so I don't know what Sherry's current position is on this. There's some question as to whether she wants it lifted unconditionally. I think she probably, I've always got the feeling she opposes it. I think if you look at San Francisco, and we look at not what Mayor Brown says, but what he says,
yeah.
He has announced a policy of, one, no arrests for sleeping, and he's also suggested that people investigate campgrounds for everybody, and that doesn't mean just homeless people, but let's say for ordinary, you know, low-income people living, you know, who are renters in San Francisco who want to go out and, you know, do roast weenies and stay overnight in some of the distant parks. So he's certainly, I don't think he feels in San Francisco, at least as a matter of policy, you need to have either one or the other, you know, campgrounds or a sleeping ban lifted. So Rotkin, of course, feels you get neither. You're going to have a sleeping ban, and you're going to have no campgrounds.
Yep.
That's the worst of all worlds.
I agree. Okay.
And your other question was about the protest.
Yeah. What happened last night? Wasn't there a city council meeting?
There was a city council meeting. How long have you been listening to the show?
For a while.
Okay. Well, we played some of the oral communications, some of the public comments section of that city council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, we asked the mayor 4 or 5 days before, and we played a little bit of that report. We asked him whether he would introduce an emergency resolution to lift the camping ban,
mm-hmm.
and he said no, he would not, because rich people wouldn't support it, and he had a number of other reasons why he didn't want to do that. I don't think he sleeps outside much. That's certainly probably going to be one of them. So the city, So what do you think about it? What's your name?
My name's Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
I just listen to the show a lot.
I'm glad.
It concerns me. I sleep indoors, however, I still think it's an important issue for this community because it's something that you have to address as people out there, you know, and you have to provide that as a community if you have a demand for it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I just wanted to support you, say I'm listening,
great,
and get some questions answered.
Are you a longtime resident here, Amanda? Or?
No, I'm not, but I'm from Boston originally, but...
Are you a student or?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Which college?
UC.
And are you like up on the campus or are you down in the town?
I'm downtown.
Have you been to the actual sleep out?
No, I haven't. I rode by once, beeped. You know, I was thinking about going down today,
mm-hmm,
signing the petition. So
that would be great.
Just thought I'd call in.
I want to let you know that if you do that, you'll make them real happy.
Yeah. So.
And the other thing you can do, and I can suggest this to everybody and have several times, is to give a call to the City Council hotline at 429-3550. That's 429-3550, and just say, please, Mayor Mike Rodkin, do what Willie Brown did in San Francisco, at least to make it legal to sleep.
I agree. Okay.
You going to do that?
Yes, I think I am. So.
Oh, cool. And come down to the and talk to the folks, and that'd be wonderful.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Have a good day.
Thanks, Amanda.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Well, there's a caller that makes me feel maybe it's worth doing the show. I mean, that's the kind of call I like to get. People that I haven't heard from before, but people that care about these elementary issues of justice. I mean, it's just baffled me over the years how city council members can completely ignore these issues. And I mean people like Catherine Byers and people like Celia Scott, about whom one doesn't hear a peep about the sleeping ban over the years because they haven't got the votes, you know. I mean, it isn't a question of whether you have the votes. It's a question of common sense and leading public opinion, you know. It's, well, here are four people. I was talking about this whole story in the Chronicle, and the Sentinel. What do you think of the camping ban? I asked on Pacific Avenue in Santa Cruz and then printed in the March 7th issue of the Sentinel. Bob Cusack, Carpenter, Santa Cruz. I don't think it's okay, but it is a matter of personal discretion. It's just the way society is. What I really believe they should do is reopen the campground at Coral Street. Jessica Maya, student, San Juan Batista. It makes it illegal to be homeless, which is absurd, but I see it from both sides. It interferes with businesses because consumers are generally uncomfortable with the homelessness. Still, where will they sleep? Joshua J. Maya, waiter, Santa Cruz. I think that ownership of property and the idea that you have to pay rent to have a place to sleep is obtuse and stupid. Everybody should have a place to sleep. Gwendolyn Boger, teacher, Santa Cruz. I think it stinks because it is an invasion of choice and space. We live in a public space, and it is just as public for them to sleep downtown as it is for me to walk downtown. Hey, any one of these people on the city council would be just a major improvement. I mean, at least on this issue, it's a strange world. Meanwhile, we have some good news. Capitola cops cancel three DARE programs, again in the March 7th Sentinel. Facing budget restrictions, the Capitola Police Department will stop teaching a widely used anti-drug program at three Soquel elementary schools and launch a new effort at the middle school this fall instead. We hate to break off this partnership, said Captain Joe Granada, but we don't have the manpower. Drug war propaganda of this sort is usually the most ridiculous ideological kind of nonsense. Anyway, we have an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, it's Chris. Just tuned in. I was in court.
Hi there, Crossroads Chris. How you doing?
Yeah, if we could just brief you about 40 a minute on what happened in court, because if we're going to pull any misdemeanor tickets, at least we'll get counsel. You know, they have to assign you an attorney.
Well, remember, are you talking about sleeping ban tickets?
Yeah.
There will be no misdemeanor tickets in court. I can almost assure you that. It's never happened in the history of Santa Cruz sleeping ban. They arrest under misdemeanors, but they charge you with infractions. Anyway, go ahead with what you reported
in
court.
Yeah, but just that I was... They're tricky. They got me in there last week,
mm-hmm,
and I asked, you know, I'm trying to recuse my attorney, remove him. He hasn't done anything, asked me what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get him out of there, get him off the case, he's indifferent to it. So I give him 18 pages. I asked some questions to the judge, like, can I appeal this decision? He says yes. Can I disqualify you? And he says yes. And then today, you know, I asked him the same questions, allowing him to hear the recusal based on that I can appeal and disqualify him. And then I asked him a question. I have to know how much time do I have to make this decision whether to disqualify you or not. And he says, I defer to your attorney, who, by the way, I'm trying to remove.
Who is the attorney?
What?
Who is the attorney?
I'm not going to say. It's not important. It's just that the contortions that you have to go through in order to try to get them to trip up, say, have some reason to appeal or get the case thrown out.
We should say that this has to do with an injunction that you're accused of violating, or is that right?
A restraining order.
Right.
Yeah. Now, the thing about the restraining order that's totally bogus is that they issued the order in a secret tribunal in a custody hearing in which I was not even notified of the hearing.
Really?
So I'm trying to attack the original validity of the order, which is one of the reasons I want to recuse my attorney, because he wouldn't seek the testimony given at that secret tribunal.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because if the order's not valid, I didn't have a chance to defend myself.
Yeah,
they can't put you in jail on secreted evidence. That's supposedly due process.
Supposedly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So his disinterest in even seeking that was a reason to recuse him.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
any comments on last? I'm going to jump back to this because I'm trying to kind of focus.
Well, that just has to do with disqualification and recusal of attorney if you want to use that procedure to prolong court battles.
Well, if anybody wants that information, can they call you? Do you have a number?
I wish they would. 469-9527.
Repeat it again, could you, Chris?
469-9527.
469-9527. Yeah, I think you may find, if you ever get an attorney for any of these cases, which you probably won't, because as I said, these are going to be infractions, which is the lowest kind of, or the most trivial kind of crime. They don't have to give you an attorney or a jury trial. But if they charge you with something else and you need an attorney and then you don't like the attorney you get, as frequently happens with public defenders, Chris has apparently had some, you know, some experience in trying to recuse attorneys. And again, once more, that number, Chris?
469-9527.
469-9527. So put that in your Rolodex.
As far as Sharon Connable, I rather thoroughly excoriated her last night for having almost no coordination, and for her relationship with River Woman to be virtually a pretense of any coordination or cooperation.
You're referring to Sherry Connable?
Yeah, yeah.
Whose article we just read.
Or getting any kind of unified statement to the city council, especially the last few months, there's been absolutely no communications, except apparently she's the only one, her and River Woman, that were even in that meeting we missed last Monday, in which Connable said they are thinking about vouchers for 80 to continue camping in the state parks. I talked to Kenny, as you know, before the council. I asked him for that. I asked him that for that at the council meeting, and we simply haven't had any word on it from the horse's mouth about whether they're going to do that or whether that's actually in the works. But
Nick, you're thinking of the wrong end of the horse here, Chris.
Sharon says it is.
Yeah.
Tuesday, the I showed the Board of Supervisors Tim Rinker's flyer.
Sleep is not a crime.
Sleep is not a crime.
That talks about our upcoming sleep out.
Is it? You know, is it?
That comes about the protest and sleep out Saturday, March 16th, which we invite everyone to come to at Cathcart and Pacific at 1 o'clock.
Right. You get 3 minutes or before the board. The room's usually empty, except for special interest groups or government people directly involved in decisions. The room's empty, and you get 3 minutes with them at 9 a.m. every Tuesday. They had a county parks and rec meeting, which was likewise empty, except for about 4 or 5 staff and a couple, maybe one student, in which they're discussing whether to build a ballpark or a 2,500-seat auditorium up at Quail Hollow Ranch, which they're making into a park.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of money, right? 2,500 seats just for an environmental display. It's a structure. They can build that for environmental display purposes, and they won't have lights after 5 because beetles are disturbed. There's a sex cycle of beetles that are disturbed up there.
Like the money that the CCH is throwing at trailers, so that this county is throwing at these projects when there are real pressing emergency shelter needs for campground.
And the city meeting is the Greenbelt Committee, which deals with open space. And Pogo Nip is there. They talked about Pogo Nip last time. and asked them to notify us. Byers and Scott were there, and asked them to notify us, and asked also at a council last night that if these open air shelter meetings are going to continue, and we were told they would be public, that they should be announced like we're on the board, and those down at City Hall can call me up and inform me what next meetings are coming, because this is one way you become familiar with what other decisions this council is making. Their discretionary income, according to Matthews, was $31 million that these seven people, and that's just discretionary, that's not including non-discretionary. That's quite a bit of money for these people. I think they're rather underpaid at $800 a month. They're making less than a person who poured me the coffee. That's kind of absurd to be making $800 a month and make decisions about $31 million between the seven of them. But nevertheless, that's how it is.
On the city council. Yeah, well, thanks, Chris. Anything else you want to add?
No, that's about it. Thank you.
All right, thanks for your report.
Yeah.
That was Crossroads' Chris Brazda, who also puts out lots of stuff on the internet regarding the ongoing struggle for emergency shelter and against the sleeping ban. He's also a Serbian patriot who has lots of information on that subject, too, and follows that conflict quite closely. What have I got here? Well, even the Sentinel editorialized against that nasty court decision about confiscating the woman's car whose husband had gotten a blowjob. It was. So everybody agrees on that one, and if everybody agrees, there's not really a lot of point in spending a lot of time belaboring the point. and I'm going to allow, running out of steam here, the tapes to speak for me, because a lot of eloquent people said a lot of eloquent things in the last few days. And even last night. So let's go back to last night. And if any of you have any questions or comments, you can break into this tape and you can catch my attention. I'll keep my eye on the phone for a little while anyway. And if you want to be on Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, I'm going to be on in 2 days, on Friday, the day the Armory Winter Shelter closes. That'll be at 10 o'clock in the morning when I come on, 10 to 12. If you want to be on the air, you have to give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Or you can show up at Taco Bell at 945 at Pacific and Laurel Streets. That's downtown. And you'll see some guy with a beard kind of wandering around looking for coffee and tacos and victims. And ask to be on the air, and away we'll go. Particularly if you have something that has to do with civil rights for the poor, because that's what this show is all about. So we're going to go out pretty soon. Before we do, however, here's a little bit more from last night and the Sleep Out Vigil, which I really urge you to support, to visit, to bring blankets and bodies and cameras and signs and kazoos to, and give a call to at 425-9679. And, of course, you can always call this station while we're on the air and report anything that's happening, or just give your point of view at 427-3772.
Hey, Gene. How you doing, kid? Welcome to the City Hall Sleep Out.
So here we have Tim is covered up with blankets in a questionable situation. Sean is definitely asleep. Jimmy is standing around in a green parka. Bull seems to be trying to improve himself, reading a book and drinking coffee. Mooncat has a big brew. Al is looking pretty casual with a smaller cup. Charlie Phillips has his beret on. Skidmarks, of course, is lingering. Chad lies asleep in a sleeping bag. And, of course, Robert Flory is covered up with a comforter. I am walking about in my bathrobe, and Jeannie has just arrived with her bike. That's how it is here at City Hall, March 13th. It's Wednesday the 13th.
Say my disclaimer on that one.
So I'm hearing rumors, Bob Drew.
No rumors.
Is making bizarre suggestions that Earth First tactics be used here at City Council. Would you like to elaborate on that, Bob?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, very interesting. Didn't realize the tape recorder was on in my pocket.
and Bob rushes to the payphone. I've been informed that Sherry Connable, who had hitherto not expressed a great deal of support for this sleep out, although she had showed up occasionally, is sleeping in her van nearby. So, we're, kind of people are litter free. And we're going to payphone here. Well, it's 3:30. I've been giving Skidmark Bob here a series of riddles, followed by a discussion of my interesting encounter at the Civic Auditorium with the friends of the library and the enemies of the Constitution, who were trying to have me arrested for giving out flyers on the porch. And we notice across the street here the same large, God, what is it, a 10-ton truck? I don't know.
It's an 18-wheeler.
18-wheeler.
With a big, what they call a sleeper.
Sleeper,
on the back of it. The engine's running. You can hear it, folks.
And it's blinking. So we're wondering if maybe we don't have a criminal violating the sleeping van. It may be time for a citizen's arrest.
I think we do, because it's been here for, God, how many hours?
A couple hours, at least.
Yeah, about 4 hours now.
Well, when I got here at 1:30 or so, it was certainly here.
My brother was a truck driver. He drove around the big rigs just like that, and he would do that on the side of the road, would pull over to sleep and leave the engine running because there's a heater that works and keeping the refrigerator thing going on the big rig thing. And he's in there sleeping, and, you know, maybe when the officers come, we could tell him to go across the street there and tell the gentleman he's got his engine running.
Yeah, and if they don't, we can claim selective enforcement of the sleeping van.
That would be interesting.
I think that, you know, this was what we noticed in 1988, where we went up to Fair and Swift Streets, where a lot of these trucks park, and we noticed many people sleeping in their trucks who were not being ticketed by the city police.
Oh, really?
I can't believe it. Huh?
Gee, it wouldn't have anything to do with them bringing goods to the corporations around here, would they?
Well, it would seem to me that the police are not, were not at that time uniformly enforcing the sleeping van. Now, of course, we know under the enlightened Mayor Rodkin, things have changed completely, and that would not even be considered. Well, I'm going to walk over there, and I'm going to just sort of take a quick look at what's going on.
Good.
Oh, we're over here by the 18-wheeler. It's McKinley and Company Incorporated, MC199402, Grants Pass, Oregon. The window is fogged up. You can't see anyone sleeping inside, and it's taking up all the parking spots next to the Civic Center Auditorium, the front of the Civic Center. The back of this is truck 807, and the license number is Oregon HP 62696, permanent, it says. Professional truckers, if we don't drive, you won't survive. So it's interesting. John Earth emerged from his vehicle a few minutes ago, and he pointed out that differences between 1988, when there were also people coming to city council to talk about the sleeping van, homeless people, and now is the presence of Free Radio Santa Cruz and the internet. And I also pointed out the social services at the Homeless Community Resource Center and the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which have drawn off homeless people. So, 5:55 in the morning, and it's getting darn cold, but the dawn is breaking.
Sun's coming out.
And Cop Watch Bob apparently has left and returned, or have you been here all night?
I left and returned. I had to go get something to eat.
And came back.
Yeah, I went to the station, flipped some tapes over, and now I'm back. Saw some police activity around the corner there. I don't know what it was all about. They didn't come up with anything, but they were in a big hurry to go check out the Sentinel parking lot.
Maybe they just wanted their morning copy of the Sentinel.
Maybe that's what it was. I'm not sure, you know.
Probably something like that.
They're looking pretty hard. It shone a light on me a couple times, but I guess they figure out who I was. I think they're trying to lure me away so they can come in here.
Yeah, right.
So
you're
get the big story here.
You are the man who keeps this whole thing together, Bob.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
Notice the big truck is still there.
Yeah.
Damn thing. They should charge the fucker parking rent or something.
There you go.
Well, it looks like, you know, the most vulnerable part of the morning is approaching, because none of the people that were up, Al, Mooncat,
gone.
They're all gone. And what's left is we have these three sleepers. Well, Sean is up. So we have Tim. We have four, including Jeannie. Jeannie's joined the sleep out. She's parked right next to the mayor's office. That's pretty cool.
She ain't gonna move either.
Who knows? Yeah, that'd be great if she stays. And of course, there's Robert Flory. And,
Yeah, Robert Flory, sir. Violating the law within 48 hours.
Well, Sherry got kind of wandered out. She went up the street there. She was in her van.
Get some coffee at the Java House.
Coffee at the Java House, yeah. Makes sense. All works together.
It's all good, bro.
I'm going to go get myself a Sentinel, see what's happening. I'll be right back.
Get me one, too.
I'll get you one.
What are you doing?
It's a wake-up call. Officer Brandt has arrived.
If they're sleeping, they're upside down yesterday. They're going to have to go to jail.
And we have Officer Medina. I think it's Officer Medina. So we seem to have some...
Come to a different direction, huh?
It's,
You're not asleep, are you?
No,
he just looks like he's sleeping.
I can't even sleep.
Guess who?
Good.
Robert Flory is here, waking.
Where's Bobo?
Busy.
He's getting the donuts, man.
This is Santa Cruz. It's chai and bagels.
Oh, I'm sorry. Come on now, guys.
Just trying to catch a few winks, for heaven's sakes.
You weren't out here last night. Where were you?
I was right here.
Not yesterday.
If I'd known you were here, Officer Brandt, I would have showed up. You know how it is.
I don't know. You're not supporting me. You're not here every night.
I appreciate it. What can I say?
Don't go back to sleep, guys.
All right. No tickets, no arrests. It's up.
Thank you for the wake-up call, gentlemen. Morning, Jim.
And that's the police wake-up call that happened this morning around 5 or 6 in the morning. Officer Brandt and another officer just came in, sort of walked around, made a few jokes, and left. Which is rather strange because there were at least two people sleeping who could have been taken to jail because they'd gotten tickets within the last 24 hours and were sleeping. And maybe they didn't want to bother with that. We speculated a bit on why things happened as they did and what that would mean.
How'd you sleep?
How'd you sleep, Robert?
He's smoking again? Is that what this is driving you to? Nicotine? Look at this.
Hey, Robert, they changed from donuts to giant bagels? What's up?
Well, so...
The only food.
So we have here, we're kind of in the midst of the, near the mayor's office. Copwatch Bob is pacing back and forth, hopping up and down.
Pacing.
Sean sits in a chair reading the morning paper. And two officers have come and gone, having given us their friendly wake-up call.
Let's not bring coffee, please.
That's true.
I got one nice.
The police apparently are not too interested in writing out tickets.
They saw you. They didn't want to arrest you. If they had arrested you, they'd have to bother everybody else.
I don't know.
They don't want to push that issue.
Nicely done. You drove them away, Jeannie. Congratulations. All right. And Chad has just slept through the whole thing. Look at this guy. Nothing can wake this man. He's snoozing it up.
You need the G-Lock.
That was the most courteous police call I've ever seen. Amazing.
And you guys need the G-Lock happening when this police came.
I'm talking to Robert Flory, a notorious sleep scofflaw, and you seem to have gotten off scot-free. What do you make of this bizarre police behavior?
I'm not sure. I was dead asleep when the police came up. And Chad over here is lying down in a sleeping bag, and they said get up, and I was kind of lying here, but then I did sit up to roll a cigarette, but then the police just walked off.
They made some rather pointed comments about, uh-oh, look who this is.
Look who it is.
Don't worry about your 20-year-old.
And so, yeah, they were hoping, they realized that I should be arrested for sleeping twice in 48 hours. Perhaps, but then they just wandered off.
Mr. Flory?
That's Bob doing his imitation of Officer Brandt.
I have to beat you now. Get him.
Actually, you know, I think did it. I think Jeannie did it. They would have had to arrest Jeannie too. Right, but you know, I mean, they would have had to cite her too if they cited everybody here.
They didn't want to deal with that, and they didn't want to deal with him becoming the media whore that he is.
Yeah. Robert Flory, of course, would have gone to jail. This would be his second cite in 48 hours.
Oh, they don't want to deal with that right now, do they?
I would say not. So the question is now, what about tomorrow night? Will it still be a 48-hour window, or are we going to be outside the 48-hour window?
Well, it'll be 48 hours up to 1:50 a.m. Thursday morning. It'll be the 48 hours will expire.
So it's not going to be as much of a crisis as I'd anticipated. We thought they were going to haul away the four big boys of the demonstration.
Yeah, really?
Sean, Robert, Dan Hopkins, who's nowhere to be seen, probably hiding in the bushes somewhere.
Dan, we put him someplace safe to sleep for his without any problems.
What's that? And Tim was sleeping, and Chad was here.
Nobody received so much as a citation.
Not a word. Not even a warning, I guess. Talking to Tim Rinker, the notorious city council critic, who dared to waste 3 minutes at least the city council's time with this tiresome personal tirade last night about some kind of, oh, I have to wake up and then I get up and go to the armory and I come back and it's just very difficult. Now, what was that all about, Tim, and how do you feel about having not been even been cited for all your protest activity?
Well, I wasn't actually sleeping at the time.
I see. So you were just playing possum, eh? That slow, rhythmic movement of your chest had us all fooled.
Well, yeah. I guess I've once again avoided getting a ticket.
I see. So does this mean that tonight you're going to be back on the old train here, on the cement, on the concrete, on the bricks, actually?
No, because I have to work tomorrow, so I'm going up to the armory.
I see. So you're going to spread endless flyers at the armory, right?
Yeah, I'll be back on...